From NPR News, this is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. Is she a pathological liar or a woman just trying to tell a good story? Margaret B. Jones wrote a memoir that seemed headed for the bestseller list. In Love and Consequences, she described growing up as a half-white, half-Native American girl raised by a black foster family in South L.A. She wrote about things like running drugs for the Bloods and watching a friend die in a gang shootout. Here's the author reading from her book on one of our sister shows at NPR, Tell Me More.
Gangs in L.A. recruit like the NFL. They go out, they look at kids. Okay, that kid doesn't have parents. That kid's kind of messing up at school. Ooh, look at that kid. That kid can fight.
The problem is that the whole story was a lie. The author was never recruited by a gang. Her name isn't even Margaret B. Jones. It's Margaret Seltzer. She's white. She grew up in an affluent part of Los Angeles with her biological family. How did this literary fraud about gang life slip through the cracks? Joining us now is Motoko Rich, the New York Times reporter who broke the story in Tuesday's paper. Hi, Motoko.
Hi, Farai.
So you broke the story. Can you summarize what the book is about? Just tell us a little bit more about Seltzer.
Well, about Seltzer herself, she is actually a 33-year-old woman who grew up in Sherman Oaks, California, graduated from a private high school, was never raised by a foster family, never ran drugs for the Bloods, as she claims in this sort of completely fabulous memoir where she characterizes herself, as you said, as part white, part Native American, raised by this black family in South Central L.A., running drugs. And I mean, it's a very elaborate, vividly told memoir with lots of anecdotes in it that a lot of people fell for.
The New York Times itself published a really rave look at this book, and no one seems to be questioning that it's well written. Do you think that's one reason why she was able to get away with it?
Well, that's a good question. I think there are a lot of – it's complicated why she was able to get away with it. There were not enough questions asked along the way. I think that's part of the problem, that she was sort of taken on her word. She was discovered, if you will. She was a student at University of Oregon in Eugene, and she had an ethnic studies professor who liked some of her writing and referred her to another writer who was working on a book about racism. And this writer interviewed Margaret Seltzer about her experiences, which she presented in this sort of fabulous way about, you know, she had already begun characterizing herself as this persona. And that writer interviewed her and included some anecdotes from her alleged life in her book. And then that writer referred Ms. Seltzer to her agent, who read some pages, loved them, and got her a book deal. And at that point in the chain, she had been referred by a couple of people that were trusted by both the agent and the publisher, and they never really thought to question her story.
Now, Seltzer was getting a lot of critical acclaim for the book. She was doing interviews, planning a book tour. Let's go back and hear a little bit more of the Tell Me More interview where she tells host Michelle Martin a little bit about her writing process. Now, remember, she said this before her book was exposed as a fraud.
Everything's true. It's just, let's say, like the scene where I went to the grocery store with my little sisters, there was more like, instead of three of us, there was five of us. But I sort of combined them into one person.
Motoko, you went on to write another story following up with the publishers. And can you explain what kind of evidence, I guess that's the word, she provided to them?
Well, what they told me was that she provided a letter from someone who she said was an OG, for original gang leader, who seemed to corroborate her story, who said, I grew up in the West Adams neighborhood of L.A., and so did Margaret Jones. He used that name. She also, in taping a video that was supposed to be used by the publisher to promote her book, took her an agent on a tour of the neighborhood she allegedly grew up in and introduced her to a woman who claimed to be her foster sister. So among those things and the fact that she had been interviewed by another writer and her experiences had been written by another person gave them the comfort level that this was all true. But most of it, I think, came from her just saying, this is true, this is my life, and them believing her.
You know, obviously this isn't the first time that people have made up memoirs. You've got James Fry with A Million Little Pieces, and ultimately Oprah kind of put him in a headlock on that one. Mm-hmm. Recently you had a Holocaust memoir called Misha that was proven to be a fraud.
Mm-hmm.
Is this going to transform in any way the publishing? Is there a conversation, I guess, in the publishing industry about how to change the practices so this might not happen?
Well, you'd think there would probably be more of a conversation, and those examples that you mentioned aren't even the first of them. I mean, you can go back to the 70s when Clifford Irving got a huge advance to write kind of an authorized autobiography of Howard Hughes, and that was a complete hoax. He never talked to Howard Hughes, and luckily that was caught just before they went to publication. A few years ago, a Swiss memoir, also a Holocaust memoir, was completely debunked. The person who said he wrote it was not who he said he was. He was not. He had not spent time in Polish concentration camps, but had lived in relative affluence in Switzerland during the war. And yet, there doesn't seem to be as much sort of soul searching that you would expect. When I interviewed some publishers on Tuesday in the aftermath of the revelations about Love and Consequences, people emphasized that this is an industry that's based on trust, that they have to ask their authors to tell the truth and rely upon them to do so, and that, in fact, Margaret Seltzer signed a contract in which part of one clause gave her a legal obligation to tell the truth. But these same questions were asked after James Frey. He didn't make up a whole persona. I mean, he was a drug addict who served time and went to a recovery center, but he did embellish and make up quite a few details, including the alleged fact in his book that he had spent something like 3 months in jail when he only spent a few hours. But even after that scandal, there didn't seem to be as much change in sort of the processes of fact-checking or looking into, you know, asking just a few key questions even of their authors.
Well, Motoko, thanks for filling us in on the story.
Thank you.
Motoko Rich is a staff reporter for the New York Times Culture Desk. She joined us from NPR Studios in New York.